Badelebenstraße 12. Heute findet hier in Kirchdittmold ein Zusammentreffen statt, zu der ein Nachbar eingeladen hat. Wir haben heute hier einen Gast, Dramasio Lopez aus den USA, der lebt in New Mexico, Socorro. Und ist ein Aktivist in einer Gruppe, die sich gegen Uran angereicherte Munition engagiert in den USA und weltweit. Es wird so laufen, ich stelle die Fragen auf Spanisch, übersetze sie ins Deutsche und Dramasio antwortet in Englisch für unser Englisch wissendes Publikum. Dramasio, la situación con estas armas, de qué se trata? Also um was geht es genau?
These are weapons that are made out of radioactive waste, and they call them depleted uranium. And what they've done is some militaries have these in their arsenal, and what they use them for is bullets, big penetrators, small bullets and big bullets. Bullets like a 120 millimeter in a Abrams tank, for instance, or 30 millimeter in a A-10 Warthog. Or they also use them as armor on tanks.
¿Y por qué estas armas están tan peligrosas? ¿Warum sind diese Waffen so gefährlich?
These weapons are both radioactive. This uranium that's being used, uranium is radioactive and it's toxic. And this is where the problem lies. At first, when I started getting involved in this issue back in 1986, and I brought this to the facility there in Socorro that tests the weapons. It's a university called New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology. I asked him about that very same question. Isn't this dangerous that these would be used in bullets and test firing here at this facility next to my hometown, little town of Socorro? And they said, no, it says, it may be, it's very mildly radioactive and it is toxic. However, the bullet itself, you know, it's not going to give off that radiation, and it's not going to be very strong because it's alpha radiation, and your skin will stop it. And it's in a solid form, so there's nothing to worry about. I said, what about when you fire this projectile at a hard target like you do here in the mountain, and I see a big cloud of smoke coming up after each time that you do this test? And then the man did not answer that question.
¿Y en qué campos de batalla se está luchando con estas armas? ¿En welchen Kriegsgebieten kämpft man jetzt mit diesen Waffen?
Okay. These arms have been used, these type of weapons have been used quite a bit in Iraq. In the first Gulf War, there was something like 340 tons of uranium projectiles and armor and large projectiles coming out of missiles as well. They were used in Iraq in the first Gulf War, something like 340 tons that the United States and Great Britain admitted to using, but only in projectiles. They did not talk about what they used in missiles, like Tomahawk cruise missiles, for instance, which were a lot of them were used in the first Gulf War. And then they were used again in the Balkans, in Serbia. And again, they were used both in bullets and armor and also in missiles, very large projectiles in the missiles, and to go into bunkers, the projectiles from the tanks, the 120 millimeter was to take out other tanks and other heavy heavy equipment that was armored.
Y los resultados, cómo resulta los efectos de estos armas, was bewirken diese Waffen, wenn man sie einsetzt, und die Effekte davon?
Okay. Well, also they've been used in Afghanistan and are being used today in Iraq. And what is the effect of these projectiles? Well, when the projectile strikes the target, it is like striking a match. Uranium burns at a low temperature. Fahrenheit, it's about 700 degrees. Uranium begins to burn, and so when the projectile hits a target, the projectile is going very fast. The uranium, it's solid uranium that's being sent out. It's like in bullets, we have we have solid lead that's shot out of a gun. In this particular case, it's a solid slug of uranium that goes through the air. And when it strikes the target, it begins to burn its way into the target. And as it's burning, it's releasing particles of uranium dust, very fine. At first, we thought it was only in the micrometer range, like 5 to 10 micrometers. But scientists today have learned that it is in the nanoparticle size, which is extremely small. Micrometer is the size of a cigarette ash. But nanoparticles are totally invisible, and they're extremely small. I don't know the percentage or how much smaller, but I think in the thousands. That it's like maybe a thousand times smaller a nanoparticle than a micrometer. Don't hold me on that one, but I'm pretty sure that's the size of it. And this little particulates go up into the air. And say let's take a war situation, a situation where a tank fires onto another tank. When the projectile hits the tank, it enters one side of the tank, and burning, as I said. And as it goes into the tank, then the crew in the tank, there may be 4 to 12 people, 4 to 10, 4 to 8 people inside the tank. The shrapnel flies into the tank from the burning, not just the burning uranium, but the burning metal from the tank, and flies around inside. Plus, these nanoparticles and micrometer sizes go in there, and it's just like a lot of smoke. But that smoke is both uranium and metal from the tank, and then it hits the other side of the tank and exits from the other side. And when the projectile finally stops, say a 120 millimeter projectile is about 16 inches long, and it's about the size of a broomstick, and it's quite heavy. It weighs around 10 kilos or so, about that range, eight to eight. I don't remember the exact weight, but it's quite heavy. In the, like I said, 10 to 12 pounds, 10 to 16 pounds, and when it goes through the tank and exits to the other side, when it finally stops, there is maybe 1/3 of the projectile left. The rest of the projectile has either gone into small pieces of shrapnel, or it's gone into these nano-sized particles, and then from there, the people inside the tank are usually killed by the shrapnel. Some people survived in the first Gulf War. Some Americans survived, and it was kind of interesting that the Americans survived because it was the Americans shooting the projectiles, but they shot their own tanks. Mm-hmm. Because what happens with this uranium,
friendly fire,
the uranium is very heavy. It's twice as heavy as lead, two times as heavy as lead. Therefore, they get a smaller projectile, smaller diameter. And by having a smaller diameter, it has less wind resistance, less resistance to the wind. Therefore, it travels farther. So in the first Gulf War, they were shooting these projectiles 2,000 meters, whereas before with a regular tungsten or steel, hardened steel, it wasn't going that far. So they weren't able to tell whether they were friendly tanks or unfriendly tanks, and there was firefights at night. So many of our own troops became ill, and many of them died. The fact is that the amount of Americans that were killed in the first Gulf War, most of the troops that were killed, I think there was a little over, somewhere around 100. I wished I had a piece of paper with the numbers on it right now, but I don't. I'm having to reach into my head for this thing. And there was something like 100 Americans that were killed in that first Gulf War. The majority of those Americans killed in that first Gulf War were by friendly fire from depleted uranium. Mm-hmm. And so that'll give you some idea of what it does to the forces, military forces that are using the weapons themselves. Mm-hmm. And not only did American soldiers get sick by or killed by their tanks being hit, but also from the from the uranium that went up into the air after that. And there were many tanks that were smoking when other Americans came in their tanks and vehicles. And they were in these burning tanks and around them. And all this black smoke was in that area. And these troops, Allied Americans and Allied troops, were breathing all this uranium into their bodies. And the results have been catastrophic. Right now we have something like, from that first Gulf War, close to 40% of those troops are now on disability, and many of them have died. So many of them got sick afterwards, not all dying. Of course, everybody reacts differently to uranium.
Bueno, entonces yo me imagino que esto, lo que dices tú, ahora se refiere a las propias tropas, pero el medio ambiente en estos lugares y la misma gente que está viviendo allí también ha de tener sus problemas. Also die wir haben eben gerade geredet von den eigenen Truppen, die beeinflusst werden oder sterben davon, von den Nachwirkungen, aber auch die Umwelt beziehungsweise die Leute, die traditionell natürlich im Iran oder sonst wo leben, sind natürlich auch betroffen.
That was a catastrophe. And this is one of the reasons this weapon is illegal under international laws, but people that use the weapon refuse to acknowledge that. What happens is civilians end up being the casualties, both in Iraq and Serbia and Afghanistan and now again in Iraq. What happens is this uranium, it has a half-life, this depleted uranium. It has a half-life of 4.5 billion years. And the longer it's out there, the more radioactive it becomes. It doesn't become less radioactive, it becomes more radioactive. And so this, it's on the ground in the areas where the battlefields take place, the pieces of shrapnel, some bullets that never hit the tank and skipped on the dirt, and children pick these things up and play with them. And it was really indiscriminate where they fired these projectiles, both in Iraq and in Serbia. They weren't selective, you know. They weren't just firing these out in the desert. They were firing them inside the cities. And what happened in Serbia was basically what's going on in Iraq. The areas where the farmlands were, where people were growing vegetables and fruits and so forth, that ground became contaminated, and it was very clear to the Serbians that this was the case, because they went in with radiation instruments and found that many of the farmland had been contaminated with this uranium, and the Americans refused to clean it up. And in fact, the Americans even refused to tell where they used the uranium. And this caused a lot of problems for a lot of soldiers, including German troops that were in the area, both in Iraq and Serbia. So what happened, consequently, as a result of the Americans and the British not telling their allies where they had used the uranium, then people like the Italians and the Germans had troops stationed in those contaminated areas. And they themselves became contaminated, and therefore we had the Balkan syndrome in Serbia, and those were people that came back ill, and many of them have died. And a court in Italy has declared that a soldier, one particular case, had died from the exposure to depleted uranium, and then the military gave I don't know how many millions of liras to the family because of this. But in the United States, the troops, many troops are coming back now from the Gulf War and or from Iraq and Afghanistan, and many of them are very sick. And what the U.S. military has done, the Veterans Administration, they will not recognize. They say that this depleted uranium does not harm human health or the environment, that uranium doesn't affect this. And they're still, I think, thinking that, you know, if it's in a solid form and it's not aerosolized, if it doesn't hit a target, then, But that's a lie, you know, they're trying to fool the people. So what they've done in the United States is when the troops come home sick, rather than say that they have the Gulf War syndrome, which was in the first Gulf War, they say, oh, no, it's that the depleted uranium couldn't hurt anybody, therefore we cannot diagnose it as radiation sickness, so we'll diagnose it as post-traumatic stress. So then the soldiers that come back, instead of treating them for radiation sickness, they treat them for post-traumatic stress. They say it's all in your head, and they give them lots of drugs. Well, many soldiers, you know, hey, that's kind of nice, getting all these drugs, and so they don't complain too much, but they're not treating them for, they're misdiagnosing them. And right now there's quite a few troops that are suing the United States government for being misdiagnosed, because today here's a man I know, like Sergeant Herbert Reed in the United States, just as an example, one of the people that's suing. He is suing for misdiagnosis, because right now he is being treated, as I said, for mental illness or stress, and they're giving him a lot of very heavy drugs. Drugs that are so heavy that if you stop taking them, all of a sudden you could have seizures or go into a coma. And that's the kind of thing, that's the way they're treating their own soldiers. Mm-hmm. Now the people that were left in the civilians left in the battlefield in the areas where it was contaminated, as I said before, the half-life of this depleted uranium is 4.5 billion years. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be there forever. And the people in Serbia have, on their own, started removing the top 6 to 12 inches of soil on their farmlands, mm-hmm. so that they can someday be able to grow crops again in that area.
Okay.
And not to mention all the sicknesses that come about, and those sicknesses are very severe.
Mm. Bueno, una pregunta al final. Ahora vemos que el Premio Nobel de la Paz ha recibido el presidente de los Estados Unidos, ¿ya? Y bueno, existe una perspectiva que estas armas serán prohibidos. Also der amerikanische Präsident ist Friedensnobelpreisträger geworden, seine Regierung oder nutzt nach wie vor diese Waffen. Gibt es eine Perspektive, dass es irgendwie anders wird? Wie schätzt er das ein?
President Obama, I've written him several letters myself, and many of my colleagues have written him and have explained to him what the dangers of this weapon is. I don't know if he's read this material, but I know he's got to be listening to his military generals. And those military generals are the same ones who okayed the use of these weapons and are actively allowing this to take place in battlefields right now. And so he may be getting some very bad advice. And so I worry about that, you know, not being able to reach the man and to talk to him. So I don't know what he will do. I do know that there are some organizations, the organization that I helped founded in Belgium 7 years ago, the International Coalition to Ban Uranium Weapons, has this issue before the United Nations right now, and a vote will come up in the next few years on whether to ban the weapon or not. And right now, the majority of the people in the United Nations are leaning towards a ban. Recently, they took a vote to investigate this further and to consider a ban. And 144 countries voted in favor of proceeding forward towards a ban, and 4 countries voted against it. The 4 countries voting against it were members of the Security Council. Mm-hmm. And the people in the Security Council, such as the United States, Great Britain, France, China, and Russia, well, there's 5 countries, those countries make these weapons, and they sell them and use them on battlefields. So they're disregarding human rights. They are not upholding treaties that are based on human rights. And what Obama does now, especially after getting this Nobel Peace Prize, I think he needs to really take a good hard look and go beyond just his advice from his military advisors, who, as I said before, are the very same people who advised other presidents to use these weapons and are happy to have them because they're very effective killers. They're very effective. However, like any weapon, eventually the enemy gets the weapon too and then is shooting it back at you. And it also gets into the black market as well. And I've been in Central America now for 6 years, in various countries there speaking on this issue. And they, in the Latin America, I spoke to the Latin American Parliament. They invited me to go there last March, and because they were aware of this weapon and wanted to know more about it so that they could act accordingly. And I explained to them what this weapon was about and what was going on. And just 3 weeks ago, they passed a resolution condemning this weapon and calling for a moratorium throughout all of Latin America to not have this weapon within their boundaries. And it is within their boundaries in Latin America. The United States was testing these weapons in Panama and also testing them in Puerto Rico. They have since stopped because of the people saying, no, we don't want you doing this. However, really bad things are happening, like Colombia, for instance. The FARC, which is a revolutionary group within Colombia, they were found to have 60 pounds of this depleted uranium. They had gotten it through the black market. So I wonder how many countries have done that. And also the Somalian pirates pirated a ship that was going through Somalia in Somalian waters or nearby, and they hijacked it, and that one particular ship had tanks, army tanks or fighting tanks, and they had armor on them, what depleted uranium, and they also had depleted uranium weaponry in there, bullets and so forth inside that ship. And I think the Somalians, I don't think they ever gave up that ship. They still have it. So this, what's happening now is this particular type of weaponry is getting in the hands of a lot of people who maybe will be turning it back against people like the United States and Great Britain and France and Russia.
Mm-hmm. Bueno, hasta aquí. Muchas gracias para todas las informaciones. Also bis hierher ganz herzlichen Dank und viel Erfolg beim Kampf gegen diese Waffen.